I'm Eric Warista, and welcome to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast. Noam Shore and I are excited to bring you this new podcast, giving you content direct from the point of view of two long-tenured season ticket holders. In this episode, we take a look back at the Revs' disappointing exit from the 2021 MLS playoffs and take a look ahead to 2022. Thank you for listening. We hope you enjoy the show, and we can't wait to hear from you. Hi, I'm Eric Warista.
And this is Noam Shore.
And you're listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast.
So it's been a few months, Eric, and you know, life has been busy. We fell by the wayside on the podcast, but it took a difficult, tragic game earlier this week to get us going here again.
Yes, indeed. Just heartbreak city all over the place on Tuesday night. What a disappointing loss.
It was a tough one.
And if we start to break it down, you know, I mean, we can start with the three-week layoff. Certainly, you know, just an incredible amount of time off to just a total momentum killer.
Yeah, I think that was a real problem for the Revs. They seemed out of sync really the entire game, even right to the end. Heal was missing a pass here or there, or maybe Buchanan wasn't making a run where Heal was expecting or something like that. But they missed a lot of passes, gave away a lot of the ball during the game.
Right, and it was so disappointing. I mean, this team was so good all year. You know, by the numbers, you know, they only trailed in 18% of minutes all season. And the few times they were down, they came from behind and won five times, which was most in the league. And so you just don't expect them to come out basically flat and on their heels. New York was able to go in and grab that first goal.
Yeah, it was tough. I was reading, I think it was Matthew Doyle pointed out that to win a game, especially in the playoffs, you need to control the ball and control the field. And the Revs did neither. They didn't have control of the ball. And New York City, credit to them, they came and bossed the game from start to finish.
Yeah, they definitely had a game plan and they executed it. And, you know, you could see it throughout the game. They were more physical. They seemed to put a little more pressure on the Revs than most teams did. And I think that was true during the regular season as well. My recollection of those games was that New York City was a very irritating team for the Revs to play against.
Right. It could be their irritating field in an irritating stadium.
Yeah, true.
That the Yankees play on. But they are irritating all around, that is true. And they were very irritating on Tuesday in terms of their gamesmanship, for sure.
Yeah, especially at the end, where everybody seemed to have a cramp every 2 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, at least for like when the Revs played that kind of a game, like Kessler was obvious about it, like grabbing the ball, kicking it out of bounds. He wasn't falling all over the floor as if he was in pain or something like that. He just
right. If you want to play dirty, we'll show you how to play dirty. Just kick the ball into the stand, throw it into the stands. You know, make a total circus of it.
Right.
But, yeah, New York had a game plan. They executed. They certainly delivered. And I think some of the issues that bugged the Revs all season came back to haunt them in this game. I mean, the Revs kind of played two types of games this year. Type A game would have been Revs get up, you know, put the pressure on the other team, and maybe they give up a goal or two late, but the outcome's never really in doubt. Type B games tended to be more along the lines of the other team scores first, the Revs immediately come back and tie it, and then from there, you know, game could have gone a lot of different ways. And I do feel good that the Revs came back and tied it in regulation. I think I feel a lot differently about it than I would have otherwise, had they just lost 2-1.
Right. Yeah, that was I agree. That was a big moment to come back and tie it twice. It showed the heart which they had. I feel like the downside of their game was almost going back 2 years to when we were actively talking about crossed crosses, which took a sidetrack this season because they were very good with their crosses. They had quality chances. They were scoring often. But on Tuesday, it was ball after aimless ball into the box, or out of bounds, or behind the goal, weak headers, and there. I think they had two shots the entire game, on goal,
Right.
leading up to the end of the even after 120 minutes. I think maybe their tying goal was maybe the third shot on goal.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it all last season, and you're right. This season, it didn't seem to be an issue. But 32 crosses for the Revs, only 15 for New York City. But the Revs completed less than 30% of those crosses, and New York was up around 40%. So, despite whipping the
Oh,
ball in
wow.
quite a bit, it wasn't clearing the first defender. It was going aimlessly out of bounds. It was everywhere but where it needed to be. That said, the two goals. One was the heel put it right on Bouxa's head for the first one, and
That
Boateng,
is true.
able to whip it into the box there towards the end too. So, you feel good about getting the tie at the end. I mean, we were going nuts in the stands. I mean, I don't know that I've ever seen Gillette that crazy for a Revs game. It was just such an emotional release, I think after such a frustrating 118 minutes. The Revs finally put it together and
Right.
finally pushed ahead and put in the tying goal. And you thought, okay, we didn't play well today, but maybe we can steal one that we didn't deserve.
Right. So yeah, let's talk about those last couple of minutes. I completely agree. The tying goal was a frenzy, was one of those moments that actually I think came home in terms of understanding later in the week once I saw a replay of Brad Feldman's call. I don't know if you were able to listen to
Yeah, it was
that.
awesome. Yeah.
Hear Charlie Davies in the background just completely losing it. They both sounded like they were at, like high schoolers calling their own game.
Yeah, the old rule, there's no cheering in
But
the press
it did
box,
make
did
me.
not apply.
Yeah. I think everyone had to put that on hold. I mean, it did bring home that it was a historic moment, and to be there in the stands right there behind Buchanan to see a goal like that in the 118th minute. It was an amazing, just an amazing time, an amazing moment. Everyone was going crazy, high-fiving each other. It was so exciting, and you just felt like, okay, Matt Turner is coming up next. I just felt like if they got to PKs, it would be Matt Turner, who would put them through. He's been amazing all year. He's won
Yeah, I
games for
mean,
them all year. He's intimidated some of the best players in the league to even give up taking penalty kicks, Nani, for
yeah.
example. And for not one goal to not one penalty kick to be stopped. I was not expecting that. I don't think anyone was
No, and that's a
expecting
total
that.
shocker. And at the same time, obviously, penalties, it's never the goalie's fault. Very rarely, can you put it on the goalie? And I thought Turner, I went back and watched it, shortly after the game, and he almost had his hand on two of the shots, maybe three. I mean, very close. But that's penalties, and there's nothing. Bouxa's penalty wasn't great, but a good save by the New York keeper, and Turner could have touched two or three of those,
Right.
and just ended up not getting any.
Yeah, I thought it wasn't Turner's fault, and just for any of our listeners out there, as you can tell, we're recording from our remote home studios with our dog actively participating in the podcast.
That's
Hopefully
right.
she'll calm
She
down a
actually
little
thinks it
bit.
was Turner's
But
fault,
yeah,
I
I
think she
mean
said.
that could be. I'll have to have a talk with her because I just don't think that's correct. I think Turner had no chance really on any of those penalties from New York, which was so surprising. You would watch like the Nashville game earlier in the week, and they what skied two or three just complete misses from World Cup squad players, and you would expect at least one to miss, but credit to NYC, they came mentally prepared for taking penalty
Yeah,
kicks.
they did really well. And maybe just to back it up a second, I mean, at the end of regulation, you know, Buxa was in alone with some pressure on him, but basically he had beaten the defense. And instead of putting it low, he put it high, and the goalkeeper for New York made a great stretch save. And, you know, for a second there, they almost stole it. And in that case, really stole it, because by then I think the Revs were playing 11v9. Depending on your willingness to believe that the New York defender there did have an actual cramp and was not using some gamesmanship there. And, you know, it wasn't a bad finish by Busa, but you just wonder if he had just rolled it into the corner, it could have been a different story.
Yeah, that was so close. You saw that shot going, and then it just tips over from the goalkeeper's outstretched finger. So let's talk about this some more, because this was something I was replaying in my mind a lot during the week. And first of all, also just going back to the tying goal and looking at the replays, Boateng's cross is stunning. It curves in towards the goal and then back out right to Tejan's feet. It was just an amazing cross, and it makes me wonder why he wasn't put in the game sooner, but we'll get to that in a little bit. So after the game, we're stuck in the parking lot for 1.5 hours, just trying to get out of the parking lot, trying to get out of the parking space. And I thought that by the time I get home, I'm just going to fall right asleep. I'm tired, cold. And then I started to feel worse when I got home. And then I lie down, like I get into bed, and then I'm thinking about that Buxa shot. And if that had gone in like the 122nd minute or something like that, because there was like five minutes of extra time. Can you just imagine what that would have been? And I couldn't sleep after that. I got sad, and I was just thinking about it, what could have been.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, no, you're exactly right. And I was kind of the same way. You know, on the one hand, we was kind of able to get to a point where I was grateful that they tied it and got it to penalties, and then by penalties is a coin flip, basically. But you do kind of replay that Buxa moment over and over again, and then you kind of wonder a little bit too. You know, he misses that chance at the end, or it's saved. Well, he didn't really miss it; it was saved. And then if that carried over to his penalty, which you know wasn't a great penalty, but you know your team makes 3 of the 4 shots, you expect to be alive to have a chance to tie it in the next round, and it just didn't happen.
Right. Yeah, agreed. Bo also missed a shot, completely missed it in what looked to be a decent opportunity, but it's hard to tell from our angle. He might have had people in front of him blocking the shot.
Yeah, I mean, all around, it wasn't... each of the Revs superstars had their moments, but it wasn't the all-around performance that we're used to. I mean, we talked about this week how Heal was 7th in touches on the Revs in the first half. You know, he's normally number one for the whole game, right. Both teams combined. So that was certainly shocking. Bo was a little erratic. And then, you know, Buxa had a pretty good game, but, he got the goal and he did a lot of hold-up work. But certainly, you know, you look at those 2 chances at the end of the game and then and then the penalty, and kind of wonder what might have been.
Right.
Maybe this is a good chance to talk about every Revs fan's favorite player, Ima Boateng. I think somewhere around the 70th minute, I texted you because we were in different rows this time, and just said this game is screaming out for Boateng. The energy he brings, the passion, the one-on-one ability, the decisiveness. He's very, he's not a rookie. He's been around the league a little bit. He knows why he's in the game and what he's supposed to do. And we saw it again this time. You know, he worked a little bit with Heal on the side and then sent in that cross. And Tejan found it and drilled it. And, I don't know why he doesn't play more. Do we have any theories on that?
I don't. I'm not able to explain it. At first, I thought maybe earlier in the season that he was... And I didn't realize that he's actually still quite young, so I thought maybe he's like a seasoned veteran, kind of like De La Garza, bring him in certain situations. But when he did start to play, the impact per game or per minute, I should say, seemed just astounding in terms of goals, assists, this energy level, like you said.
Yeah, he's everything you want in a sub, right? He changes the tempo and pace and structure of the game. And all I can think is that he is a little short, so maybe he's somewhat of a liability defensively. Or he's such a change of pace that they want to keep that available as long as they can. But, you know, if people see it more, they might be able to better defend him.
Perhaps. But, you know, Arena, so let's talk about Arena subs, because he didn't listen to you. He brings on Tristesson and Bunbury, and then has to sub off Tristesson. And Bunbury brought some energy, but he also brought his classic long touches. I mean, I am a Bunbury fan, but it was an odd set of subs and an odd timing as well, waiting until basically the end of regulation. Obviously, they had started to slow down. They weren't able to keep up with NYC all the time. And they needed to put the game away. And it was just some strange decision-making for me by Arena, I have to say.
Yeah, I thought so, too. And, you know, I think what I would say is Maciel was sort of a strange substitution. But we said, okay, well, he's a guy who can possess the ball. Maybe give him a little more structure. As you said, help out with possession. But Tristesson is someone who I feel like never found his place in the lineup or with the team. And, you know, it's one thing to bring him in late to try to kill off a game, but if you need the go-ahead goal or the tying goal, he's not the first person I would think of to bring. He's probably the fourth or fifth person you'd think of off the bench. You know, I mean, you have Bunbury who came in, you know, Boateng for sure.
Right.
Even Maciel or Kaptoum or, you know, even Justin Renix maybe.
Yeah, so I stand corrected. I forgot that Bunbury was subbed in later. It was first Maciel and Tristesson. Right.
But, you know, credit to Arena. He's made a lot of great changes throughout the year that did pay off. And he realized his mistake, and you had Boateng come in, change the game with Bunbury. And although at that point, you know, they're basically playing five strikers in an 11-on-9 situation. So they should be able to score, but
a little too late. That is true. I was also irked by Arena's comments later that he said that they didn't have the best roster in the league and that they had played over their heads during the season. And I found that hard to believe. My first reaction was, really? Like, who's better, NYC? In this situation, in terms of the roster, there's no way. And they had four players chosen to the best 11, and that excluded Buxa, who easily could have been in that first 11 as well. So nearly half of the first 11 team for MLS this year was the New England Revolution. Right. Plus, they had a pretty good bench.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about it all year. The real strength of the team was depth, and how having five substitutes instead of three available was a huge advantage to this team, because no matter what the situation called for, there was someone who could come off the bench and change the game, and that was true Tuesday as well. On the silver linings front, I thought DeJuan Jones was absolutely everywhere in this game. You know, he may have been responsible on one of the goals, but certainly made up for it with a number of stops and had a few just charging runs forward and really did a good job, I thought, causing problems for New York when he came down the wing.
Right. Yeah, agreed. I thought Farrell had a pretty good game too, in defensive stops and tackles.
And I agree with that. Farrell played out of his mind. I mean, he almost got hurt at the beginning. I got very nervous there for a second, but he's such a calming presence on the ball and such a good defender as well. But to maybe go back to that Arena comment, I don't think it's a roster problem. I think of it as a problem that has plagued this team all season, which is giving up goals out of nowhere. If I look at the starting defenders, you know, Kessler and Farrell, very solid in the middle, Bai and Jones. Individually, I think they're all terrific defenders. I think two, three, or maybe even all four of them could be MLS All-Stars. But something happens in transition between the four of them and Polster and McNamara, where the Revs just give up a lot of goals out of thin air very quickly against teams and in situations where they shouldn't. I mean, it's happened right. game after game. And, you know, the Revs led the league in goals scored this year. They got two on Tuesday. That should be enough to win most games in MLS. But those defensive liabilities just crushed them. And 3 minutes in, they paid the price once again.
Right. Yeah, it's like they had also 18 wins, which is an MLS record, and maybe you brought this up already, with only one goal difference against the other team. So to your point, they gave up goals, and they didn't always put teams away.
Yeah, that's right. 18 one-goal wins out of, what was it, 23 wins. So there's a lot. There was a little bit of either luck or... I don't know what else you could call it, but maybe
Matt Turner.
Well, that was the other thing. Yeah. Matt Turner was spectacular all season. And I think it might've been Matt Doyle at MLSsoccer.com who brought this up. But if he's good instead of spectacular, then the Revs record is not quite what it was.
Right.
And he was good again Tuesday, you know, he just wasn't out of his mind. So.
Right. Right. Yeah, so other silver linings. So this is starting to look back at other Boston sports history, because I think this game was historic. And to be there, the comeback, the failure at the end of the season, essentially, after such an amazing run, the best team in MLS history during the regular season. If we were in Europe, that would be it. We already would have won our trophy.
Right.
And be league champions. It does make me think about playoff structure. That certainly, as we talked about, the 3.5 week layoff, I think was really challenging to come in and play their game effectively. So the 2003 Red Sox, they had a crushing loss against the Yankees.
Right.
And they almost lost again in 2004, but they did come back. They had a core team. I can't remember who left the team after 2003. But,
the manager.
Now the manager. Oh, yeah, the manager. Oh, so that's an interesting one. And Arena has already said he's not sure if he's coming back, which was surprising. I thought he'd be the long-term manager. You know, he's in a way, he is Bill Belichick of MLS, but he's already won his championships elsewhere. And so I just wonder if he has what it takes to create that again in New England. It's it takes something else. But without Buchanan and potentially Buxa leaving and others, what's in store for the Revs next year? But 2003 is something that I think about. And another thing is that the Patriots changed their logo, I believe, right before they won the championship. So, you know, there's the Revolution have a nice new logo. I'm a big fan of it, I have to say. Some change in the air for next year. And maybe having won the Supporters' Shield, having proven that they can be the best team, they can almost, I'm not sure if this makes sense, but to relax a little bit. They've proven that they're a great team. Next year, they can focus on mentality, putting teams away, defense, and come back with that added bite from having come so close this time around.
Yeah, and that added bite is something we talked about a little bit. You know, Polster and McNamara had great seasons. They weren't great in this game, and I almost wonder if they had, you know, rather than those two guys on the field at the same time, if they had a superstar defensive midfielder or even just like a very good defensive midfielder, rather than essentially having two somewhat similar guys on the field at the same time, and that would free up space for someone else. But yeah, I think... I really like your analogy to the Patriots and the logo change. Now, they also had a stadium change, so that's interesting, too, to think about. I was a little surprised walking around. I mean, I was looking for some of the new merch. I had my wallet open. I was holding out money, and there was nowhere to buy new merch. They were either sold out very quickly or the new scarves and things like that. And they had very little in the way of merchandise of the new stuff. And the old, maybe for that reason, the old stuff wasn't even discounted. So if you were a fan of the crayon flag stuff, you pretty much had to pay full price for that, knowing that it was going to become a vintage item 3 months later.
Right.
So.
Yeah, the merchandising was interesting. Even in the main pro shop, there was nothing really of the new stuff. There was a few sweatshirts, and then most of it, they had some shirts, no kids items, and no scarves. I guess we just hit it correct at the right time in the concourse, the little pro shops that they have up there, where they had a scarf selection. So my son and I got scarves.
Oh, nice. Yeah, we.
So I imagine those sold out, but. Yeah, there wasn't a lot.
I mean, we had talked about this when they announced the change. Why now? I think it was late September or early October when they put out the press release. And we both sort of speculated, well, they probably wanted to get it out there for the holidays so that they could move a lot of product. And that certainly wasn't the case. And I kind of poked around the website the other day, and it wasn't all that inspiring. You know, I was in Dick's Sporting Goods this weekend, and they had a couple of items, you know, like a pennant with the old logo. There was a long sleeve t-shirt with the new logo, but there wasn't, you know, a lot of inventory. In fact, I would have guessed that t-shirt was a return from somewhere else.
Right. Yeah, maybe it's a combination of supply chain issues, and it's at least the Revs didn't have people like buy for Christmas all the old stuff and then change the logo right after that. So they probably wanted to give people a heads up. And it could be that the new things that they did make sold really well. I did see a number of the new scarves. They sold out on the online store.
Yeah, that's true. I saw a lot of people dressed up in the new gear. So that was encouraging. And I think if we have a message going into the off season, I think it should be very positive. I as frustrating as Tuesday was, I can't help but feel exceedingly optimistic about this team, these guys. You know, maybe there'll be one or two changes. Obviously, Tajon's going to Europe. It's possible they'll lose somebody else, but you know, maybe they'll bring in someone better. So you just never know.
Right. Yeah, the biggest question for me is who replaces Tajon Buchanan. He just brings so much on the field. He's such a threat all the time. And he's so difficult to defend. The Revs have rarely had a player like that who can just constantly threaten play after play after play. And then with Jones on the other side. So I think that's a big one. Who can they bring in that? Because I think it's hard to find players like Buchanan. There aren't many players
right,
like
him. Right. The last guy we had like that was Clint Dempsey.
Yeah, maybe somebody who can bring that X factor. So I'll leave it up to Arena to find that person who can make it all click and send them to the MLS Cup.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, you know, could Boateng step in and play the Tajon role for 90 minutes or no?
Right.
Tajon did a lot of defensive work too. So, but I'm pretty pumped for next year. I mean, I think the season starts next week or no, it's 3 months, two months from now. So it's a very short off season. And, you know, I think the biggest thing that'll be next year is Bo can't miss as much. He's got to be a little more accurate. And he scored 16 goals this year, something like that. So,
right. Yeah. Golden boot for the Revs. But
he had a good season, but Heel puts it on a plate for him so often that he just need, if he could just convert, you know, 5% more, some of these one goal wins are going to be 2 and 3 goal wins.
Right. Yep. And our dog Rye fully agrees. Right. Bo needs to put it on target. All right. Well, it was an exciting season, quite a game to be at and to experience. It's the classic Revs experience at the same time. We were talking about our 2005 playoff win against the Metro Stars back then, and Conno Smith coming back in the snow, put the game away. It just didn't happen this time around.
Yeah, close call and a lot to like. And it certainly seemed like this was the year, but as we've gotten used to saying with this team, well, wait till next year. And we'll see you next year, and I think there's a lot to be excited about in the new year.
Sounds good. Good to talk
with
you.
Good talking with you, Noam. thank you for listening to The Last Team on Turf, a New England Revolution fan podcast with Eric Warista and Noam Shore. We hope you enjoyed the show and can't wait to hear from you. The show was hosted, produced, and edited by Eric Warista and Noam Shore, and all opinions expressed are their own. Incidental music written, arranged, and performed by Eric Warista. Rev's crowd clips appear courtesy of the New England